Patikshu cha mugdha bhavena tatra tatra vishakta mati pranaya bhara hridaya karaparnyat skandheno dvahati evam utsanga ursi chadhayo palalayan mudam paramam avapa. Translation. When entering the forest, the animal would appear very attractive to Maharaj Bharat due to its childish behavior. Maharaj Bharat would even take the deer on his shoulders and carry it due to affection. His heart was so filled with great love for the deer that he would sometimes keep it on his lap or when sleeping on his chest. In this way, he felt great pleasure in fondling the animal. Purport. Maharaj Bharat left his home, wife, children, and everything else to advance his spiritual life in the forest. But again, he fell victim to material affection due to his attachment to an insignificant pet deer. What then was the use of renouncing his family? One who is serious in advancing his spiritual life should be very cautious not to become attached to anything but Krishna. Sometimes in order to preach, we have to accept many material activities. But we should remember that everything is for Krishna. If we remember this, there's no chance of our being victimized by material activities. So it's very nice to hear how Maharaj Bharat and the deer, there was such a nice relationship between them. Spiritual life is all about relationships. And it's charming to hear about this. Whose heart will not be melted upon hearing how Bharat Maharaj loved the deer and the deer loved him. Perfect love. What Maharaj Bharat did not get in his home with his empire, that sweet love he got without any disturbance from having to be a big king and all the name and fame and glory. He could have pure, unfettered love with no one else to disturb of the deer. So he loved the deer and the deer loved him. What a beautiful story. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of so many beautiful stories. However, Yanisha Sarva Bhutanam Tasyang Jagrati Sangyami Yasyang Jagrati Bhutani Sanisha Pashyato Munehe. This very strange thing, Krishna consciousness, this love affair with a deer is condemned. It's bogus, it's maya. The same thing, Arjuna, a very good man, very noble, doesn't want to fight. And this roguish Krishna, who these foolish people worship, tells them to fight, and they even call it philosophy. Yeah, so what is night for all living beings is the time of awakening for the introspective sage, and vice versa. A completely different outlook. Which is why Krishna begins in the Bhagavad Gita by teaching that we are not the body. The body is temporary, the soul is eternal, which Arjuna was already aware of. It wasn't that Arjuna was unaware of these things. I mean, even at the present day in India, at least Hindus and Jains and Buddhists have some basic idea, extremely basic idea of this, that we are eternal living beings. But the implications of that are all important. The implication of that is that one should not be focused on the affairs of this life, however sweet they may be. Because that sweetness turns to poison. Yatta dagri vishamiva and vice versa. Pariname brinta upamam. Poison, what seems like poison in the beginning is nectar in the end. What seems like nectar in the beginning turns to poison. So for all this loving affair, very sweet loving affair, then Maharaj Bharat had to die. And death is followed by birth. Birth is means there must be old age and disease. And for all Bharat Maharaj's careful attempts to protect the deer from wild animals, when Maharaj Bharat died, his body was quite likely eaten by vultures and jackals. He got a Parsi burial. Well, it's not a burial. And you know that, Parsis? How they dispose of dead bodies. What do? Do they burn them or bury them? They leave them out for the vultures to have a feast. So, and then after that, what happened to the deer? Well, probably for the actual benefit of the deer, the Maharaj Bharat would have been better to have let him run off in the forest and join some other deer. Because he was so dependent on Maharaj Bharat that when Maharaj Bharat died, then he wouldn't even know how to collect his own food. And without other deer, how would he go on anyway? How would he, at least if there's a group of deer, they have some kind of protection against predators, because they, if one of them, only one of them needs to become alert to impending danger, and then they all become alert. So that's a little, in other words, if one deer in a group becomes aware that there's a tiger or a lion close by, then he or she, to use correct language, notifies the others, and they can all run away. And only one of them gets killed, usually, in such a case. Whereas if there's only one, then it's that one gets killed, and that's it, finished. So, Bharat Maharaj is aware of these things, which is why he left his home, what's the list given here? Home, wife, children, kingdom, and everything else. Because he wanted to surrender to Krishna. And everything else he saw as a distraction. Which is why the general idea is there that one should, if one's going to take up spiritual life, people often ask us this, well, if you take up Krishna consciousness, then you have to leave everything. You have to leave your home, you have to go to the mountains, and that is the general idea. That a sadhu leaves all these entanglements because he takes spiritual life so seriously, he wants to concentrate on that alone and just leaves everything, goes to the forest or the mountains. So it's not required in Krishna consciousness that one leaves family affairs if one is in married life. But at the same time, it's a pertinent question. How can you surrender to Krishna if you have to surrender to your wife, to your boss at work? Your boss tells you, take that picture of Krishna off the wall. It's not allowed in the office. You want to surrender to Krishna, you want to think of Krishna, but the boss doesn't want you to, and you have to do what the boss says. Because then you get the money to serve the children and the home and everything else. So how can you surrender to Krishna if you have to surrender to your boss at work, to your wife and children at home? One's life is going in a different direction. So it is possible to dovetail family life with Krishna consciousness or make the best use of a bad bargain. These different terms are used. The best thing is to live in the society of devotees. Why Srila Prabhupada set up, or wanted to set up, communities in which devotees could live, so that even in their work, they have to do, everyone has to do something. Sharira yatra pita te naprasiddhyada karamanaha. Everyone has to do some work, some kind of work, some kind of activity. But if one is living among devotees, with devotees, then we can do that in an atmosphere of Krishna consciousness and have everything clearly centered on Krishna and be in association with devotees rather than of non-devotees. And in that way it becomes much easier to surrender to Krishna and think of Krishna. We find that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as an example, he wrote many songs in which he gave the idea how in, or several songs, how in family life one can offer everything to Krishna, seeing the family members as servants of Krishna, and one maintains the family for the sake of Krishna. But he himself was anxious, and actually did retire early from government service, so that he could fully dedicate in activities that were directly Krishna conscious. So Bharat Maharaj, for this point, although he could have been Krishna conscious at home, and there are examples here in the Bhagavatam also of many examples, Ambarish Maharaj, just one of many, but Bharat Maharaj, he wanted to go on the fast track. The idea is that there should be no possibility of any distraction. If one is in family life and dovetailing one's activities in Krishna's service, there's always the possibility of distraction. Just like we often hear it preached here in ISKCON in India, that one's career or one's studies at the college, they are your devotional service. Well, they can be if one is fully dedicated to Krishna and doing them, doing those activities only for the sake of pleasing Krishna, or predominantly for the sake of, if it's predominantly for the sake of pleasing Krishna, it's not full pure devotional service. It shouldn't be considered, if one is simultaneously harboring and nurturing material desires, then this confusion, deliberately creating confusion, that this is on the level of pure devotional service, this should not be created. That is a disservice to the cause of pure devotional service. There are so many possible dangers there. Bad association. The idea, well, I'll advance my career so that others can see me, and then they'll also want to become a devotee. And that means attracting people on the material platform. It also means to have that attitude, I want to get ahead in my career. Then you have to associate with people who have such grossly material motives. It's very bad association. Asat Sangatyag, A Vaishnava Cha, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said that a devotee is characterized by giving up bad association. In what we might call respectable society, non-devotee society, the idea of giving up bad association is that, well, you don't mix with rowdies, drunkards. These are bad people, and respectable people don't mix with such people. You don't invite hooligans, rowdies, prostitutes. You don't invite such people into your home. Respectable people don't do that, but nowadays everyone does it all the time. Everyone has rowdies and prostitutes in their home, on the TV. They're welcome. And if you don't watch TV, people think there's something wrong with you. But it's very bad association to watch this violence and lust. Kaam, Krodh, Lobh, the three gates to hell. They're all prominent on TV. So this is bad association. We're supposed to give up the... In devotional service, bad association means what? Stri Sangi Ek Asadu Krishna Bhakta. Stri Sangi means a materialist, lusty person. Literally means one who associates with women, and that particularly means for material reasons. Although traditionally sadhus, they give even for any reason, they don't associate with women at all. And another is Krishna Bhakta, one who is not a devotee of Krishna. So even if someone is very pious and well behaved, they're not a rowdy or a prostitute hunter or any such thing. They're respectful, cultured, well behaved. But if they're not a devotee of Krishna, that is bad association. So Bharat Maharaj, he left home so that he could fully concentrate on Krishna consciousness. But he got in bad association. How can a deer be bad association? The deer has no bad motive. But for us, it can be bad association if we become overly attached, as Bharat Maharaj did in this case. He left all association, and then he got attracted to a deer. He forgot that everything is for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada writes here, we should remember that everything is for Krishna. If we remember this, there is no chance of our being victimized by material activities. It's a simple formula. As Srila Prabhupada often said, Krishna consciousness is very simple. It is very simple compared to, for instance, well, let's see. Krite yadhyayato Vishnam, meditating, it's not very easy, it's not very simple. The austerities required, the fixity of mind required, it's not easy. Tretayam yajato makhai. This performing sacrifices, there's so many conditions have to be fulfilled. The place has to be pure, the performer has to be pure, the ingredients have to be pure, the chanting of mantras has to be exact, everything has to be exactly perfect. There are many complex rituals to be performed, even to set up the yajna vedi, the platform for that. That requires knowledge of geometry and so many things. So it's not very easy, it's a very complex ritualistic process. Dwarpare Paricharyayam, deity worship, again, lots of rituals, procedures, consideration of purity, punctuality, so many things. But Kalo Tadhari Kirtanat, in Kali Yoga Kirtan, which is a very simple process. There's no prior qualification or there are no difficult procedures. So the whole process of bhakti is very simple, especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given it in a very simplified way. But we find that although the process is difficult, the process is not difficult, but we find the application of it difficult. It should be a very simple thing to remember Krishna. One time, Srila Prabhupada gave a lecture on this verse, Mandana Bhava Mad Bhakto. I can't remember which verse it was, either in the 9th chapter or the 18th chapter. So the translation was read. Srila Prabhupada didn't usually, when he was giving class, he didn't usually read the translation and purport. He would have one of his disciples read it, usually. And then Srila Prabhupada would start to speak. And usually Srila Prabhupada's first word of a lecture was, so, as you have heard. And then Prabhupada said, so, what is the difficulty? Is it difficult to think of Krishna? And when Srila Prabhupada said it, it seemed, no, it's easy. But we find the difficulty. We do all that is required. We may be doing all that is required, rising early, chanting, being engaged in Krishna consciousness. But to think of Krishna, somehow it doesn't come. Somehow means due to anarthas, due to contaminations within the heart. We should remember that everything is for Krishna. That's prior to remembering that everything is Krishna. Krishna is everywhere. Krishna is everything. Sarvara jangam deke na deke tar murti sarvatra hoi tar ishta deva svurti. One who is fully Krishna conscious, although he sees everything in this world, moving and non-moving, but he sees everywhere Krishna. Sees Krishna is everywhere, in everything, at the same time separate from everything. He's fully Krishna conscious. So prior to this stage is remembering that everything is for Krishna. As Srila Prabhupada comments in one Gita purport, that in the preliminary stage of devotional service, a devotee takes pleasure in performing the activities of devotional service, and later in a mature stage, he takes pleasure in simply remembering Krishna directly. But the focus has to be kept clearly on Krishna, because it's we do find it very easy not to think of Krishna. Or rather, our mind doesn't naturally go toward Krishna. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur once made a very insightful comment. He said, we can know what is our level of devotional service. Where does our mind turn to? We have to keep engaged physically, mentally. When there's a gap, when there's nothing directly for us to think of, or we're not fully focused, where does our mind turn to? Where do our thoughts go? So we have to focus on Krishna and consciously, clearly put Krishna in the center. Remember Krishna. That's the whole point. As Srila Prabhupada replied when he was asked, what pleases you the most? The question is asked because yasya prasadad bhagavat prasada. If one can please the pure devotee of Krishna, Guru, then we get the mercy of Krishna. So what pleases him the most? We ask him, what is it? If you love Krishna. That was Srila Prabhupada's reply. So at the present time within this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, there is a lot of emphasis on what is called indirect preaching, or sometimes called bridge preaching. The idea of incrementally bringing people to Krishna consciousness. So this idea is that people are not ready to take to Krishna consciousness very directly, but they might be ready to, more inclined to take up something which is somewhat on the way, or they might be willing to take up some kind of activity, or some they might be willing to accept something, from which stage we can take them gradually closer to Krishna. And ideas, or just by interacting with them in a pretty much mundane way, we can make friends with them and gradually bring them into Krishna consciousness. And programs like that include vegetarian cooking classes, yoga classes, what else? Fashion contests. Is that indirect preaching? I guess it's supposed to be. What's the point? It's very difficult to understand how that brings people to Krishna consciousness. Oh, I see. The children bring their parents. And then what? And then you tell them that actually your daughter, who is the fashion queen, that body is just a bag of stinking pus and bones and blood. Is that the idea? Is it? Okay. All right. Well, the idea is indirect preaching. And then you... You have to pretend not to be a devotee of Krishna. Or if you let them know, still you make them think, well, devotee of Krishna is someone who's something like everyone else. They're nice people, and they're not religious fanatics, and they're not trying to convert you, and they're just real nice people. So... You relate with people and say, hi, how are you doing? And things like that. And just like there's this, what's that called, Bhakti Vriksha program, they have this breaking the ice. Icebreaker. Yeah, that comes from an English expression, breaking the ice, which means that at the beginning of a social function, you take the ice out of the fridge, and you break it out of the container, and then you put it in the glass, and then you pour the whiskey on top of it. That's where the phrase comes from. Not very appropriate for devotional settings. So the idea is that you just talk to people, small talk, and then they feel happy. So there's a danger in this, because in doing so, we assume an identity that we're not supposed to. We assume a way of acting and talking that does not foster Krishna consciousness, either in ourselves or others. We assume the identity of someone who is acceptable to people who are not in Krishna consciousness on their terms. We become like them, with the idea of bringing them to Krishna consciousness. But it's a very dangerous thing to do. It's something like being an undercover agent going into a country and pretending to be one of their citizens just so you can get some information or sabotage their war efforts or whatever. It's very dangerous, because if we act and think and dress like ordinary people and mix with them in more or less an ordinary way, then we start to think like that. We start to assume that identity ourselves. And it becomes very difficult, if we establish a relationship with people at that level, to change them, because they have established a relationship with us on that level, and they expect us to be like that. One of my disciples in a country in Europe, Bosnia, told me that they did something like this, some indirect preaching program, and after 2 years of gradually bringing people, they told them, well, actually, we're Hare Krishna devotees. And some of them said, what? You cheated us. Why didn't you tell us in the beginning? We're not interested in Krishna consciousness. So they just wasted 2 years and made people who had no interest in Krishna consciousness, made them more dismissive of devotees for being who the people considered them to be, hypocrites. So it's very dangerous. Our own devotees, they get used to talking in mundane ways, acting as if they're mundane people. It's very dangerous. And then we start to assume that role and identity. And we might think, well, it's much easier to be... Actually, this thing about being a Hare Krishna devotee and all the time people think you're weird and all the time you're just different from everyone else, it's a very strong propensity in the human psyche to want to fit into a group. And so when you have to be different all the time, it's a strain. Maybe when you're young and a kid, you can be somewhat different, but to go on your whole life being a weirdo who people can't relate to, it's much easier just to be normal. Problem with being normal is that in this material world, normal means birth, death, old age, and disease. So that's why we took to Krishna consciousness. Just like Bharat Maharaj left home, he was the chief normal among all normals. But that situation meant that he wasn't going to achieve the goal of human life. Normal means parabhavastavada bodhajata yavanna jignasata atmatattvam. It's normal for people to be foolish and not inquire into the nature of the self. But that normality means that we, as usual, we get another death, another birth, and old age and disease in between. So what do? We go to the forest like Bharat Maharaj, not recommended in the modern age, but at the same time the principle is there. We have to perfect our lives by taking to Krishna consciousness. And it's very favorable to do so, to maintain a distinct identity different to that of non-devotees. Because if we mix with non-devotees, asatsanga tyag, then we start to absorb their mentality. So again, Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to establish these devotional communities in which people can live. It's not expected that everyone can be so committed and so determined like Bharat Maharaj. They can just leave all their affairs and go to the forest. And there's a danger in doing so. If Bharat Maharaj had been in association of devotees, he'd have a better chance of not being victimized by a deer. He would have had loving exchanges with devotees instead of seeking loving exchanges with a deer. So establishing vanashram communities is required. Vanashram means that is based on Krishna consciousness. It's often misunderstood to mean some caste system, but the whole point is how to live with others whose ultimate goal of life is Krishna. Ultimate goal of life, whose goal of life is Krishna. They may have other goals. It may not be that everyone is a completely pure devotee, but everything is clearly centered on Krishna. So there may be many difficulties in establishing such a society because the whole social setup is so different nowadays. It's the whole idea that everyone has to earn money. That's not there in Varnashram society, that you have to earn money. Earning is only for Vaishyas, and that also not by doing a job. Not every Vaishya also. Many Vaishyas, they may not be involved with money at all. There may not even be any money. In a small community in which all necessities are produced locally, there's no need of any money. It serves no purpose. So the modern society is very much based on money economy. and one's role in society and one's function and duties. There's not many duties, but one's role is as a money earner. Varnashram is a very different basis altogether. Apart from the spiritual basis of serving Krishna, the social basis is something like Karl Marx's idea that everyone should work according to their capacity and take according to their need. But it's a more developed social structure in which people... It's not like Marx's idea of a single class, but realistically dividing society into four major classes in which people are situated according to their guna, their qualities, their propensities and karma, their natural inclination and ability to work. When we say work in modern English, that one thinks of a job, I'm going to work means you're going to 9 to 5 or whatever. But for a brahmana, his work is not exactly work in that sense. Studying shastra. I mean, in the modern age, if someone's sitting around just studying, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why don't you do something useful? Srila Prabhupada actually said that if someone wants to simply sit and read all his books all day, they can do so. That's allowed. There's one letter when Srila Prabhupada says, anyone wants to sit and read, they can do all day. But they don't do. They simply sleep all day. So, it should be. It's important to see what is everyone capable of. In the modern age, everyone thinks, I have to send my children to school. But is it required for everyone? Is it the best thing for everyone? For every child that they should go to school? We have to see if they require it according to their propensity and ability. If they are intelligent in the matter of scholastics, then they should be sent to school. They may be intelligent in other ways. A potter or a weaver, they're intelligent, but in other ways that don't require being sent to school. How the potter makes pots, the child who's studying shastra, he may not know how to make such a nice pot. The potter does it very nicely. Very well. So he has another kind of intelligence. So it's important that everyone know their abilities, which also means understanding one's limitations. Someone may think, I want to be a big preacher and a big leader, but they just don't have the ability. Dhanadas Swami told the story that in his childhood in New York City, there was a boy he knew who was really wanted to be a great basketball player. The problem was that this boy was very short. And to be a good basketball player, it's required to be at least as tall as Gokulchandra Prabhu. At least. That's the minimum in professional basketball. So, to be short is just you can play for fun, but to be an basketball icon, minimally you have to be as tall as Gokulchandra Prabhu. It's an impossible dream. He may practice all day and this and that, but he's not going to be a professional basketball player. He's not possible. So one should be realistic about one's abilities, and not that, well, my son has to be an engineer or a doctor, but doesn't have what's required. As I just read yesterday in one book called The Philosophy of Science by, you remember the name of the author? No, okay. Alex Rosenberg, good Jew. Just see, racial remark. I could be in prison for that in some countries. Not saying there's anything wrong with Jews. Well, he wrote that we should, science should not study the effect of genetics on personality traits like anger, tendency to be violent, intelligence, and so on. We shouldn't study these things. In other words, he's saying that, well, maybe some people are, some races are more intelligent than others, and some are by nature more violent than others, according to their idea, their genetic theory. He said we shouldn't study this, philosophy of science. It's not politically correct to do so, because according to the United Nations, everyone is equal. So, you should take that seriously. Actually, a few years ago, in a class in America, in one of those few temples where people come to classes, I brought up this, I said, as I gave as a point of contention in the class, I said, well, we can objectively say that Jews in general seem to be more intelligent, better in making money, and in being comedians. There are many things that Jews are famous for. They seem to be a more intelligent people than the average. To which I was replied that no, it's not necessarily. It may be a culture, the way they're raised and their culture and this and that. And the other thing that blacks seem to be better at sports in general and dancing, physical things. And some people seem to be better at, some people seem to be better at things which require brain more. And even today, even though in India, although people from the Indian Hindu Brahmana caste, mostly they have the consciousness of being like Shudras. They're interested in getting jobs and enjoying sense gratification. But they seem to be more intelligent than others. So if we want to talk in genetic terms, which we don't in particular, but that is one way of looking at things, then we could say that some peoples by racial or hereditary characteristics, they have certain traits. We don't have any problem saying that about animals. If we say one animal is faster than another, we don't have any problem saying that, but we can't say it about humans because we're not supposed to. But it is an important, that is there in Varnashram. It's a realistic, included in that is a realistic understanding that some people are better than others in certain things. It's not a condemnation of some. If you say that blacks in general, or whatever they're called nowadays, American, African-American, whatever, they keep on changing the name of them, they tend to be better at physical activities. No one will say, what do you mean to say is that whites are worse? Indirectly you're saying that, but if you say whites are more intelligent, oh, you can't say that. But this is required in Varnashram society, and even just for sane organization. I mean, in our temple, if we were to say, okay, it's now we should have a more egalitarian setup, means everyone's equal. Well, who's cooking chapatis today? Rasik Shekhar Prabhu is expert. He's there in the kitchen cooking chapatis. If you put someone in just who doesn't know how to cook chapatis and say, no, someone else cooking. Why someone else? We should have another. Make someone else the temple president. Why should Gokul Chandra be the temple president? Just change it. Because we all got to be equal. But they may not be so. It's quite likely that if we put someone else who doesn't have that propensity, if we make them the temple president just because everyone has to have an equal chance, that they won't do such a good job. So that some people are called brahmanas, some people are called kshatriyas, some people are called vaishyas, and some people are called shudras, and they have different roles to play, it shouldn't be taken as an insult. Just to recognize that I don't have the abilities that someone else has. And even someone might be very good at... What usually happens, we see in our movement, is someone is a good preacher, then they become a temple president, and they may get promoted further, and that one gets promoted to one's... until one comes to one's level of incompetence. That's one of... What's that? Parkinson's Law, one of those? What's it? Murphy's Law, something like that. You get promoted, and when you get to the position, what's it called? Which law? Murphy's Law? Parkinson's? Peter? Peter Drecker. No, I think he borrowed it from someone else. It's older than him. So the idea is you get promoted. You're doing well, you get promoted. You're still doing well, you get promoted further. And eventually you get promoted to a position where you're not fit for it, and then you remain there. So all the people at the top are mostly incompetent. This is not a good way of doing things. It should be seen. Someone may be a good preacher. Doesn't necessarily mean that they're a good temple president. I mean, we saw, you in Croatia saw, one devotee who had become glorious for distributing books. And practically his own spiritual life and the whole of one flourishing area in Krishna consciousness became destroyed because he was made the GBC. And he was made a guru. And he wasn't... He didn't, whatever, for whatever reason, he made a mess of that whole situation, and his whole spiritual life went backwards, and many others with him also. So it's very important to see what are we. It's not that we should try to do the best we can for Krishna, as one of our GBC members told us, be the best that you can. Of course, he didn't mention Krishna. Well, not of course, he should have mentioned Krishna. But we should do the best that we can for Krishna. But part of that includes recognizing what we're capable of. If we're ambitious to be a GBC. You could all be GBC members in future. Why are you going to just be going out and selling books and doing these ordinary things? Come on, do the best you can in your life. Get ahead. You can become a temple president, and then after that you can become a GBC. What are you doing just cleaning the floor here, wasting your life? Come on, it's a big organization. Make a name for yourself. Well, you could think like that. We don't recommend it, because we're here to become das, anudas, anudas. But it is possible to get ahead in the organization, and we see sometimes the parents of young men who join the movement, they've become very dissatisfied when they learn that their darling son, who they spend so much money to put through college, is now cleaning the toilets in the temple. But then later, when he gets a good position, then they be, oh yeah, very good, yeah, sure. Yes, ISKCON's a very good organization. My son's the town president of a big temple. So, anyway, first of all, to nurture such ambitions is foolish and is antithetical to Krishna consciousness. But also we should see if who is suited for various services. Someone may be a good preacher. They may not be a good organizer. They may be a good organizer, but they may not be a good preacher, in which case they need guidance, because people are good organizers, but they're not so much into preaching. They tend to organize at the expense of preaching. They miss the point. Preaching is the essence. Or we may think, I want to study Bhakti Shastri course, Bhakti Vaibhav, Bhakti, Vedanta, and then Bhakti Sarvabhauma. I'll become an emperor of Bhakti. But if we have the brain, we may not have. It's not that Krishna endows people with different abilities. So some real Varnashram means there's some realistic placing of everyone according to their needs and their propensities, how they can best serve society and serve Krishna. Varnashram, depending which level you're at, the real consideration should be how to serve Krishna and how to live in human society. If one is in lower consciousness, it may be how I can live in society and serve Krishna. That Krishna must be there. Otherwise, it's dharma swanushita punsa vishvaksena kataso yaha. Not padi adyadi ratim shrama evahi kevalam. Simply a waste of time. All this discussion of varnashram. Krishna must be very strongly placed in the center. We have so many theoretical discussions, but we always have to remember it's all meant for pleasing Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment about this, please? Could you all follow what I was saying? I was speaking a little quickly today. Could you all follow? Can't say no, because can't admit your limitations. It's good to admit our limitations, to be aware of them. Gopala Acharya, what time is it over there in Ireland? It must be before Mangalarti. He doesn't sleep much. In the Western countries, devotees watch TV. No, you're wrong. Devotees don't watch TV. They don't like to appear in devotional clothes. Well, if something looks like a duck, walks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, what do you call it? A duck. So if someone doesn't like to live like a devotee, talk like a devotee, act like a devotee, appear like a devotee, what do you call it? A devotee? No? If you want to be a popular temple president, you can organize a fashion show. There is a precedent for it, right here in Tamil Nadu. Fashion, ISKCON fashion show. Actually, we have the best fashion show every day. Radha and Krishna, how they're dressed. So anyway, what's the question? Talk about love and relationships and less love and good relationships. It seems to me the more you talk about it, the less you have it. If you have to talk a lot about love and relationships, it means you don't have it. If you have it, you don't need to talk about it. It's something like those who know do not speak, and those who speak do not know. Those who have to have seminars about relationships means there's some serious problems. Trying to intellectually work out how to have some relationship. But relationships don't work like that. It's just a natural give and take. If we all serve Krishna together selflessly, then automatically the relationship will be good. What's there? Still trying to ask the question. A lot of talk about love and relationships. How they should all be sweet. That means they're not sweet. Devotional principle of strictly following sadhana. Yeah, if we do that first of all, then with Krishna in the center, then everything else will follow. Otherwise, theoretically, trying to make love and peace and all this kind of thing, it won't work. Yeah. When talk of following devotional principles is brought, then people get upset. Then what? Then look, you know, what are you doing? Why bother at all? Why bother with this horrible Hare Krishna movement? Just go and join Osho. You don't want rules and regulations? There are plenty of organizations like that. Why come to Krishna consciousness at all? Don't come. Don't bother. Why bother? If you want sense gratification, it's the wrong movement. Actually, it'd be a good idea to set up a full-fledged Sahajiya movement in the West. And then we get rid of all these people. They can go and join it. Why should anyone be upset by talk of strictly following? They never heard Srila Prabhupada insist on these things again and again and again. Then don't join this movement. Go do whatever you like. No one's forcing you. We're not forcing. But if we are to be followers of Srila Prabhupada, then we have to follow the principles he gave us. If we don't like it, then just don't try to kidnap Radha and Krishna. Take them away from Prabhupada and say, it's our Radha and Krishna. No, it's Prabhupada's Radha and Krishna. And we have to approach through, and Rupa Goswami's Radha and Krishna. We have to follow through the Acharyas. We can't take Radha and Krishna and make them our property on our own terms. Yeah, so, what's the question? Should one associate with such devotees? Well, I wouldn't even call them a devotee. We don't want to follow rules and regulations. We don't want to follow all these things. We want to watch TV. Then why come here at all? What's your relationship with Krishna consciousness? You can just tell them that I'm saying to Gopala Acharya, just tell them they're a nonsense and then they'll go away and criticize you more. Yeah, and that's a very important point. You may think, well, we have to be open and accommodate everyone, but when you bring in new people who read Srila Prabhupada's books and are inspired by that ideal, they'll be spoiled by these people who'll tell them, no, don't be so strict. Bad, what is that? The bad spoils the good. What's that saying? There's some saying. Better we have only one person, or rather than all useless. One cow that gives milk is better than hundreds that don't. If milk is what we're after. Then we need a cow that gives milk, not hundreds of cows that don't give milk. There's another saying. What is that? Better to have an empty barn than a barn full of bad cows. I'm just trying to think of the Bengali. I can't think of it now. Shota dushta goru teke shunna goshala bhalo. Something like that. Better than having 100 useless cows is to have an empty barn. Empty goshala is the Sanskrit word. Hare Krishna! Questions, comments, protests? I don't get protests here. Yeah, if we go to, especially in the West, we go to some Rathiatra, then you just have to merge in and tolerate everything, like all the young boys and girls all mixing up and playing doing kirtan, just doing it. It's like the hippie era, something like that. Many of the devotees, supposed to be initiated devotees, got long hair, sometimes in dreadlocks, all kinds of things. Then they may be gay couples, devotees, all kinds of things. And the sannyasi is supposed to be just there and just smile and love everyone. That's the job of a sannyasi in ISKCON today. To smile and love everyone. I guess I need to go to a how to love seminar so I can learn how to love all these kind of things. Hare Krishna. Actually, once after a lecture in Russia, some years ago, one devotee who's the wife of, who's now a guru in ISKCON, Russian guru, came up to me and said that, "You're just like Jayadvaita Swami, you have no love." For your information. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.